It's WKXL in the Morning, and I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. It's time for the New Hampshire Business Update with Jeff Feingold, editor of the New Hampshire Business Review. You can get more from them at nhbr.com. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be here, AJ.
So you got a couple articles coming out in your latest edition here. The first one is super interesting. I've heard about it from a law policy perspective a bit, but Army, which is run by Dean Kamen, has basically an ultimatum.
Yeah. Well, basically, yeah, he's sounding the alarm. You know, to give a little perspective on this, Army is the Advanced Regenerative Medicine Institute. It was an initiative that began, I think, in 2017 when Dean Kamen, the entrepreneur, inventor, and all around Renaissance man, I guess, helicopter pilot. He got like an $88 million grant from the Defense Department to study whether it's possible to, on a large scale, create replacement organs in a commercial factory setting, quote unquote factory setting, using someone's own cells. And the Defense Department's interest in this is pretty obvious because of all the, unfortunately, all the wars we're involved with and other things where our troops are injured and, you know, very seriously in many cases. So anyway, they've started doing this, and it's being studied. You know, it's been working for a few years now in the Mill Yard in Manchester, at one of his buildings at 400 Commercial Street. It's been going now for 4 years, and I guess we did an interview with him, and according to Dean Kamen, it's not a question of if they can create organs on a commercially viable scale. It's when.
Yeah, this is going to happen.
It's going to happen. They already are setting up a scale 20-something thousand square foot kind of mini factory at another one of his buildings down the street in the Mill Yard, where they will bring in companies that are interested in, let's say, a company that wants to create ACLs, mm-hmm, or other things like that. And they'll have this whole, like an incubator for these companies. And the idea is, and the hope is, that these companies come here, get these skills, learn how to do things financially viable, commercially viable, and then actually say, you know what, I want to stay in Manchester or New Hampshire, and that's what I want to do is here. And I want to do it in the Mill Yard or somewhere else in the city or in the area. But Dean's concern is that he thinks that people in New Hampshire don't really understand what this could mean, because if this industry takes off, it could possibly be just
gangbusters.
A game changer for New Hampshire, for New Hampshire's economy, for just in terms of where it stands in the tech world. He says there's support from the governor and some other people. They've passed a couple of tax credit and some other stuff. But in the long term, it's a matter of having the support of people in New Hampshire to really understand a little more about what is going on in there. You know, some people think it sounds ghoulish. You're creating organs, you know, like Dr. Frankenstein or something. But this is something that for many people is necessary. You know, you think about people need lung transplants.
What's more ghoulish, taking it from a cadaver or almost cadaver, growing one in a lab?
And it's also the other thing you have to remember, this is going to be created from the person's own cells.
Right.
So the chances of being rejected are very, very slim.
Yeah, and from an intellectual property and technology perspective, which is the day job focus I deal with in policy, is this has been Lucy Hodder's been speaking about this for years. Like shortly after, I think Dean Kamen started the Army Initiative and working with the university in Manchester, and the outgrowth that can come from these, from lawyers wanting to move into the state because there's going to be much more technology and health policy outgrowth coming from it. Yeah. From a technology perspective, the companies that would support the infrastructure for these are astronomical. I mean, the servers that are required to really run these sort of projects are huge.
Yes.
And then the labs. I mean, we're going to get some high-skilled workers in the state.
Well, the interesting thing is, this is why it could be such an amazing bonanza, as I put in the headline for New Hampshire, is that the actual workers in the factories, when it gets to scale, that you won't need a PhD in biochemistry or anything like that. It'll be something that's trainable. You could be able to become a technician from, you know, at a community college, for what it sounds like. And that's going to mean a lot of jobs, really good jobs. And, you know, it's you know, being in the mill yard, I live in the mill yard too, and I work in the mill yard. The legacy of the mill yard is, you know, having the company town with the Mammoth Company and the millions of square feet of mill space creating, you know, cotton textile. But, you know, at one point, something about 10% of the workforce in New Hampshire was employed at the mills in Mammoth.
Wow.
And I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but I mean, we're talking about just an amazing number of jobs that could be created because, you know, there's how many organs are there.
Yeah. And the mill yard needs to diversify that part. I mean, that part of Manchester needs to diversify. I mean, there's SNHU and UNH are there, which are huge employers for that part of town. And Franklin Pierce University used to have a campus down on the far end. I don't know if it's there anymore. Dyne DNS is down there, but when you think of it, Dyne's not there anymore.
I would argue Manchester's economy is pretty strong right now, and BAE Systems is building a facility that's going to have about 800 jobs created.
Oh, wow.
They're opening in Manchester, and there's some major employers here in the mill yard, Autodesk, and many others. And there's a tech boom going on in New Hampshire. You know, we have PillPack here, which is I think about 400 or 500 jobs. And many others. And, you know, Manchester, I think that's part of the problem is that people don't understand what's going on.
Yes,
in Manchester.
Exactly. I don't. I live in Concord.
Except for the people of Manchester. And I think maybe that's one of the things that Dean's talking about. You know, I had a conversation with someone just the other day, a very smart guy, you know, very, you know, just, you know, a physician, very, very, very in on everything. And he said, he was talking to me about the Seacoast because he used to live there and about how, is that still is that still a real big boom town, the boom area of New Hampshire? I said, well, it is. It still is, but I'm going to argue that it's the Manchester area right now because there's so much more activity going on. And also, Seacoast is having some issues with the housing that it's the worst in any part of the
state.
There's
no housing.
Exactly.
And Manchester's the only place you can get any housing. I mean, where
yeah, there's some. Yeah, it's a little bit easier. And also, there's something else about, you know, there's the airports here, and, you know, Portsmouth does have the airport there, but the airport in New Hampshire, in Manchester, is much more significant. And there's a lot of activity around the airport, a lot of warehouse distribution logistics, and more of it's coming in the Manchester area.
And you're talking about the high level workers that would be coming in to start to work in an in industry like this. They want the ability to commute to DC if as needed for to go to the USPTO, to go to Capitol Hill. They need that ability, and Manchester's there, already has the infrastructure for it. I mean, it seems like they should really nurture this relationship to encourage them to build up here.
Yeah, and that actually, and the real thing that concerns Dean Kamen is that there are other places, states and cities that are really keeping an eye on this. And they're willing to spend big money to say, you know, come to us, we'll give you $100 million or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, that's something New Hampshire does. And that's why we have to work really hard to make sure it stays here.
And that's, I mean, hopefully Dean Kamen will not forget the relationship that the various stakeholders in the state have had with him, because there's a lot of people that want them.
He's actually very, very, very big on New Hampshire. I mean, if you just to see how much investment he's made in the state, I don't think that's a concern.
Good.
I think his concern really is for the state and about how this is an opportunity that can't get thrown away.
Mm-hmm. Anything else on that?
No, that's it.
So what's going on with the vaccine mandate with New Hampshire business owners? This has been a point of contention that I've been talking about on the shows for the last couple weeks now, since Biden made his big announcement to dump responsibility on OSHA to force vaccine mandates or weekly testing for companies of 100 employees or more. What's going on in New Hampshire?
Well, what we did, we tried to do a quick survey. Well, you know, it wasn't a scientific survey. We talked to a number of larger employers that would be covered under this mandate. And it was really interesting because some of them are concerned about just having to force their employees to get vaccinated. And they were worried about how that would work. And others are happy to have this mandate because they think it's good for not only for their company but for their business as well. And I think in particular Steve Dupree, who's the owner of several hotels in Concord, that developer, and he told us he thought it was a great idea having this mandate because he's looking not just as employees but as, you know, his customers.
Yeah,
he wants people to come in the hotel who are vaccinated.
Yeah, that's really surprising to hear, especially from him. I mean, he's a known Republican supporter of John McCain in previous campaigns, and
yeah, but I think that that's another whole discussion. But I think the Republican Party is not the same as it was.
Yeah,
when Steve Dupree joined it, but I think the concern really is right now that what is the guidance, and they're still waiting for the guidance, especially for that large employer mandate. That means that companies with over 100 businesses with over 100 employees are going to have to do the mandate, and it's still not clear who pays for this stuff. You know, how do you decide who has 100 employees? If you have, you know, if you're one company with, you know, several different sites, and each of the sites has less than 100 employees, does that count?
And the work from home situation. Work from home situation is a total confusing factor where there's been people that are work from home only. They never have to go in the office. And now there's some employers that refuse to be realistic about it or are telling them to go get tested on a weekly basis, which is it's just nonsensical.
Yeah. And the thing is about the testing is, I mean, apparently it's not going to really be an option, and they just want people to get vaccinated. And the interesting thing is the statistic that Bob Sanders came up with, who wrote the story. Only 10% of the, about a tenth of the employers in New Hampshire would be covered by this mandate.
Oh, that's it?
But it's half the workforce.
Oh, holy crap.
Because New Hampshire has a lot of small employers.
Yeah.
So it would be a major deal for this. And, you know, and then also I've noticed that there, you know, slowly there've been mandates imposed by the major employers themselves, because the mandate isn't just for large employers. It's also for healthcare providers and, you know, nursing homes and stuff. And they've already imposed mandates like Dartmouth Hitchcock. And I also noticed the other day that BAE Systems, which has 6,000 or so employees in New Hampshire, they're going to have a mandate for their employees. And I think it's slowly dawning on employers that this is where, unfortunately, they have to play their role in this, because they've been trying for how many months since the vaccine was in January?
Yeah, January.
So 10 months. And it's still, you know, we're still at 60% or so. And that's not anywhere near the number we need, the percentage we need to really be able to move on from this. So they're hoping this is going to be one more way of encouraging, well, maybe not encouraging people, but getting people vaccinated. And so far, some of the information we've seen is that these employer mandates are working, because there's been concerns that people are not going to come back to work and we have a workforce shortage. But in most cases, the compliance rate is like in the high 90%.
Oh, wow.
And in some cases, even close to 100%. So there are people who are insisting not to get vaccinated, but there are still many, many more who say, okay, I'm just going to do it because I want to work.
Yeah, and there's the employers, still, I guess, keeping on the employer side of it, is that there's a huge liability if they have an outbreak going on. I'm shocked by the volume of healthcare companies that didn't force it from the get-go. I don't know if it's a matter of they don't want to risk getting being the basically the big lawsuit that ends up going to the New Hampshire Supreme Court. It's not worth the financial risk and the time investment for it, maybe the reason why, but they already force people to get the flu shot in these situations.
Yeah, but I think the real concern for the healthcare employers in particular was that they have a severe labor shortage.
Yeah.
And I think they were concerned that, you know, people are going to leave and they couldn't fill the jobs because it's hard to find people. But I know that at some point, you know, push comes to shove, and you say, well, look, we're a healthcare provider. and like you said, they already mandate flu vaccines and other things for their employees, you know, and that's why the argument against it is just kind of, it's specious. the anti-vaccination mandate at this point, considering what's at stake economically for the state, for the world.
Especially with Pfizer getting the full FDA approval. I was totally understandable of everyone being nervous about the fact we had emergency authorizations only, and we rolled this out very quickly. Like, there's no way around it. It was rolled out extremely quickly with just the bare minimum of testing that they needed to get done to get it out. I totally understand the nervousness about it. The Pfizer vaccine has approval and has even been approved now with emergency authorization for a booster shot. If you guys, especially in the healthcare industry, if you trust the flu shots, you trust the MMR shots and all these other ones, I mean, this is now in the same category.
Exactly. You know, I'm looking forward to getting my booster shot.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's like it was interesting. We had an event on a Wednesday night. It's our annual Business Excellence Awards, which we obviously didn't have in person last year. And we had it, and it was the first public event that Business Review has done since the very
2019.
Since 2019. And we had about almost 300 people there at the Capone Center. It was amazing. It really was. It was packed. People were really into networking. It was almost, and I talked to many of them, and they said, you know, it's been so long since we've been able to do this stuff. And that was really what they were there for, to see other people. I mean, we had some great award winners, and it was a great event, but a lot of it was about just business people have not been able to do that. And that's a big thing for a lot of people, for almost everybody in business, is to talk to others in the industry and in your industry and others, you know, potential customers, vendors, all that stuff. And, It took, you know, it was a, it was really prime. I could not believe that there were that many people who showed up.
It was really,
and it was a really nice event. But just the idea that, you know, this is, it's saying something about, I think people just getting so tired of this.
Personally for me, I mean, my day job's with the university, and the law school had their reunion weekend last week. And I was shocked the number of people that were like, I can see everyone that I haven't seen in 2 years. We had a full house. It was amazing to how excited everyone was. Everyone's positive. No one's like freaking out. They're wearing their masks if they're nervous, so they have that comfort level. There's no shame for people for wearing masks.
Absolutely.
I think it's the new world is kind of being accepted a bit, and people are sick of it. The number of people that told me, I'm going to continue double masking for the foreseeable future forever. And the second that their employer said, you don't have to wear a mask if you don't want to, if you're out, if use discretion, if you're in the hallways or outside around buildings and stuff, you don't need to wear a mask. That mask came off so quick. They're desperate to see people. They want to see people. They want to interact with people.
Exactly. And that's something that we have to remember that. And, you know, and the intransigence on people getting vaccinated and you know, just doing their part, as my friend's mother, who's 93, said, you know, we sacrificed in World War II and you just can't get a shot.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, it's the whole thing with this the time we're in. I mean, when was the last time there was something that groundbreaking or that extreme as a world war? I mean, there was 9/11, but that was small potatoes when you consider what happened back in during the Vietnam War.
And also in World War II, you know, the sacrifices people made were over years. You know, we're talking about obviously gas rationing. There was all kinds of rationing of food. There was things that were not available. There was basically, you know, you had to recycle everything, and you couldn't get stuff because, you know, all the raw materials were needed for the war effort.
And not
to mention that you're giving your in those days, your son, you know, who might not come back, and you know, many hundreds of thousands of people died, Americans, in that.
The downside to good times was that good times create weak men, which create hard times again. That's the cycle. All right, Jeff Feingold, New Hampshire Business Review. Thank you so much for joining me again this week.
Sure, it's great talking with you.
WKXL in the morning at 1450 AM, 103.9 FM, and nhtalkradio.com. I'm your host, AJ Kierstead. Check out nhtalkradio.com to get the podcast versions of the show. We'll be right back.